Welcome to the Plus Size Traveler Podcast, formerly known as the Plus Size Globetrotter Podcast. We are the first podcast dedicated to traveling while plus sized. We are actually currently re-recording our first few episodes of the podcast. We started this in February of 2018, and we didn't really have a formula yet. We developed that over time. So now we're going back and just cleaning up some of our earlier episodes so we can have everything pretty much uniform and the same. And that, of course, includes this episode about Southern Italy and choosing shoes for a plus size traveler. You can find our podcast online at plussizetravelerpodcast.com and on Facebook, Instagram, both under the Plus Size Traveler Podcast. My name is Lauren. I live in Maui, Hawaii. I work for Expedia. I'm a activity guru, a travel consultant, however you want to think of me. And my torrid size for reference is a size 28, which is a 4-5 as well. You can find my blog at theplussizedglobetrotter.com, as well as on Instagram and Facebook at theplussizedglobetrotter.
And my name is Adrienne. I am in Los Angeles, California. And when I'm not traveling, I am a director of marketing at one of the studios here. And I'm a torrid size 18-20, just depending on the season. I travel every other month for work and or pleasure. If I haven't been traveling, I ache to get on a plane. You can find me at travelingadrienne.com and on Instagram at travelingadrienne.
So in addition to our highlighted destination this week, we are going to talk about another plus size travel topic or essential item. And this episode is talking about the best shoes for traveling whilst fluffy. Now, Adrienne, what are your thoughts on shopping for travel shoes?
Well, let's talk about your everyday walking shoes. So everywhere outside of the United States and maybe New York, people walk and they take the public transportation often, but you're going to have to walk. So you want comfortable shoes that will get you from A to B. Now, Lauren, on the average, when we go to London, how many miles do you think we walk?
So for a London trip, I would say per day, we'll probably do 6 miles, maybe. Doesn't that sound about right?
I think it does. And it sounds like a lot, but you're doing it through time, like going down to the tube stations and walking to something else and walking to your hotel. It all adds up. So you definitely want comfortable walking shoes. So my thoughts is to have a tennis shoe. And my favorite are New Balance because they are a little bit wider and my feet are pretty wide. They are fantastic. And a lot of them have the memory foam insert already built in the shoe. And I got to say, I just came back from New Zealand a couple of weeks ago and I forgot my tennis shoes. It sounds banana pants. I forgot my tennis shoes in my car. My car was getting worked on. And so all I had were Converse Chuck Taylors and they're flat with no arch support.
Oh.
And my toe was going numb. I was having so much back problems because there was no arch support. So I will tell you, shoes are absolutely important. Lauren, I was hobbling more than you did on our trip to New York. I was dying. The Chuck Taylors are kind of narrow, so I wear them for style. They're kind of like closed-toe flip-flops. There's no support.
Nothing.
So I was dying. Walking miles in those shoes is horrible.
I tried recently to get some Chucks, just trying them out in the store, and I was like, no, this isn't going to work for me. I need a lot more support. So it's not great that you had a similar shoe womp-womp than I did in New York City, but it just goes to show that it happens. You're going to pack the wrong pair of shoe. So we're just trying to help you benefit from our mistakes. It's been a year since we went to New York. My shoe, wah, wah, wah. But I will tell you that way, it's another way for you guys to understand that we're all going through the same things when traveling whilst fluffy. I had been living in Maui maybe 3 or 4 years when Adrienne and I met in New York City. But I've been wearing an everyday shoe in Maui, which are Crocs jelly shoes. So not your traditional Crocs, like with the like strap in the back. They're literally like the 80s jelly shoes that you remember having as a kid if you're anywhere near my age group. I was thinking it was going to be fine. I walk at least a mile in and out of work. We have to park pretty far away. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be fine. fine. These jelly shoes are amazing. I was really wrong. I wasn't a little wrong. I was really wrong. So Adrian noticed that I wasn't doing too well while we were trying to walk across the Brooklyn Bridge. And she basically drags me against my will, like I fought her tooth and nail. And she gets me into a Nordstrom Rack to buy some tennis shoes, especially because, you know, she's a New Balance devotee. I'd had New Balances back in the day as well. So ultimately, I tried on some awesome shoes that she had talked me into, and it was definitely the right thing to do. I was very grateful in the end to toss my jelly shoes into my suitcase. Again, my jelly shoes, great for work, for walking, you know, a mile max two during a day, but like literally walking across Brooklyn, not happening. So thank you, Adrian. It was probably the best thing you ever talked me into doing.
While I was driving through the lambs and the goats and whatnot in New Zealand on the wrong side of the road, I was so miserable. I was looking for a shoe store. And by the time I found one, it was like the end of the trip. I'm like, I'm just gonna like suck it up for one more day. But your shoes make so much difference in your attitude. I was so bitter by the end of every day just from crappy shoes. So heed our warning. Now, when you're going international, you're gonna find yourself walking on a lot of different surfaces. So it's a really old city. It's gonna be a mixture of cobblestone streets and maybe wood and whatnot. And you really want to have some shoes that are going to give you some support. I know that flip-flops seem like a really great idea. Save those for the beach, not for when you're walking around these big medieval cities. The most important thing to remember is break your shoes in before you travel. Don't bring a brand new pair of tennis shoes on your trip without wearing them a few times first to get them ready to go. I went to London with a girlfriend of mine. She bought tennis shoes while we were there, and she had huge blisters because she hadn't broke them in yet. So definitely something we need to do. So we did a poll on one of our social media pages the first time we did this episode in 2018, and other plus size travelers recommended Merrell's, Clarks, and Keens. Now, my mom wears Keens, and she's also an extensive traveler, so she really likes them. I don't have a pair of those. Lauren, you looked into getting some Merrells, right?
Merrells are incredibly expensive, and I'm sure that's for a reason. I'm a firm believer in you get what you pay for. However, I just wasn't ready to make that jump where I'm comfortable monetary-wise. Like, we're talking like $200 to $300 for a pair of shoes in some cases.
Oh. Well, I'm sure they're worth it because I see a lot of travelers wearing them, like backpackers. I love Clarks for work. I have Clarks boots and shoes, and I can walk in these shoes, and they're great. You wore some Clarks on your European road trip a couple years back, and you love them, right?
I do love Clarks. So I was literally crossing all of Europe, and there were going to be times where I was going to be in snow and times where I was going to be in incredible high heat. I bought these Clarks New Buck, N-U-B-U-C-K, and they got me through the whole trip. Now, mind you, I did leave them in my hotel room at my very last day. Like, I beat them up, basically. I wore them for 30 days straight, walking probably like anywhere from 5 to 9 miles a day. And I'm a big girl. So I thought bringing them home just, you know, wasn't going to be worth it. I'll just get a new pair. They'll be my disposable Clarks. And I'm sure like a Merrell would have lasted. I'll buy a $60 pair of Clarks and then toss them at the end of a 30-day trip.
But also, you're coming back to Maui. When are you going to need New Buck shoes in a tropical environment? You probably won't.
Oh, no, that's very true. That's another reason why I'm not quite ready to invest in more expensive travel shoes. In regard to those Clark New Bucks, I just want to throw in that socks really matter. I was an idiot, and well, no, I wasn't an idiot. I should be kinder to myself. We should all be kinder to ourselves. I was not thinking about fabric when I purchased these really, really cute Doctor Who socks from Torrid.com. But unfortunately, they were mostly polyester, which meant that while I was walking, my feet were slipping and sliding just like a little bit inside the shoe due to the polyester fabric. And that was creating friction. Friction created heat. And I kept sliding off to one side of the shoe because of it. That led to another reason on how beat up these shoes got. So I would really suggest 100% cotton socks because you're going to want that natural fabric.
While we're talking about socks, I really recommend that if you're going to take a long haul flight, that you wear compression socks. As you know, if you are on a long flight, you can get what I call cankles, which is chubby ankles because of not being able to move your legs. But compression socks really, really help that. In fact, I was reading an article of this young gentleman who was probably in his mid-20s and he was a backpacker, and he fell asleep with one of his legs bent. And I think he was taking a flight that was over 10 hours and he got a blood clot and he almost died. And he was a fit, young, non-overweight person. So it could happen to anyone. So please use your compression socks. They are not sexy, but they're necessary.
I literally just saw an ad for compression socks today. So I have not done it yet, but I definitely think I will for the future.
When you take those long haul flights, you have to go to Hawaii to the mainland, then mainland to Europe. You don't get the cankles?
Oh, I'm not saying I don't get cankles. I'm just saying I haven't gotten compression socks to take care of that.
I would land and then my foot was so swollen, it would be painful to walk because you're in the air and you're not really moving around or you're probably falling asleep. So you're not moving your legs. But the article of this experienced traveler, young guy who could have died and they got him to the hospital in time, that changed it. I'm always wearing compression socks, anything over 3 hours. So I go to New York a lot. I'm wearing compression socks. I've got all kinds of neon colors so I don't lose them in my piles of clothes. They're inexpensive on Amazon. You can get a 5-pack for like $20 and what does that really cost you? It could save your life.
Who would have thought a sock could have saved someone's life? Well, back to shoes. Like you said, Keens are really popular for a lot of travelers that are thinking about doing a lot of hiking. I see Keens a lot here on Maui. They do work really well for all-terrain walking, and it just comes down to a stylistic choice. I see a lot of people wearing Birkenstocks more and more when they're coming to Hawaii. I honestly think it's a big mistake. What a lot of people don't do is read like the care manual, basically, of the Birkenstocks when they get them, and you can't actually get your Birkenstocks wet a few times before the glue actually breaks down. So I thought, oh, look at all these cute travelers with their Birkenstocks. And so I bought a pair, and within 4 months, one of the straps just totally disintegrated because of the glue disintegrated and the strap came off. So I reached out to Birkenstocks and they're like, yeah, these shoes aren't meant to get wet. And I was like, what? I was really shocked. So great for travel because they do form fit to your feet. And they do provide like arch support. But if you're doing like anything like a bathing suit vacation pool, you're going to be getting them wet more than like on accident once, maybe caught in the rain. I wouldn't go with the Birkenstocks, but it's time to talk about our destination. Adrian, do you feel like we covered shoes and feet pretty well?
The only other thing I would say, if you're going on vacation, you may have some events where you want to dress up and you can bring your dress up shoes, but just know, break them in. And yeah. If they were tight when you bought them, they're going to probably be tighter when you land because of feet swelling. Even with compression socks, there's still a little bit of swelling. So save yourself the headache, buy shoes that fit and break them in. Walking shoes, dress up shoes, any shoes.
Absolutely. Well, it is time to talk about our destination, and that is Sorrento in the Naples region of southern Italy. And both Adrian and I have been to the Naples region, and we did it in two completely different ways. I personally flew directly into the Naples airport. The airport's small, but it's very efficient. Our first destination was actually to go to Sorrento. So with a very little bit of research, we found out that there is a timed bus that basically does rounders from Sorrento to the airport and airport to Sorrento. You can also get the similar style bus from the train station, and I think even from the docks, because there's a lot of cruise ships that dock out there. The bus ride out to Sorrento was very easy to catch, but it was a big bus, and you're driving on really narrow roads, like right on the cliffside. Like, I was just amazed at how well this bus was driven, and it was a beautiful, of course, as you can imagine, drive from the airport out to Sorrento. And we arrived in just this one area that is pretty much like the depot where everybody gets dropped off and picked up in Sorrento. And we had done an Airbnb in Naples. So we had been met by the guy that was renting us the Airbnb. And he was this tiny little Italian guy, just quick, ready to go. Let's go. Let's go. And he took my mom's suitcase, which was understandable. She's the elder of the two of us. But that did leave me with a 50-pound suitcase. And again, it was a 30-day trip, probably 30-pound carry-on across cobblestone streets. And I'm talking not slightly cobblestony, but like big, deep cobblestone streets. And it was incredibly difficult dragging the suitcases. Had I been able to do it at my own pace, it probably wouldn't have been a problem. But by the time we got to the Airbnb, I was just like, can we stop, please? Once at the Airbnb, once able to take things at my own pace, I found Sorrento to be an amazing and beautiful seaside town that I would 100% visit again without a doubt. We got lost on purpose, going down the different narrow streets, finding adorable restaurants in the most unlikely corners. Like you'd think, oh, everybody just lives here. But no, there's a huge restaurant right there and tiny little shops along these really narrow pathways. Everybody was just super nice. My very favorite part of Sorrento, despite the fact that you would think it would feel really touristy, a lot of Italians still live, work, play, and enjoy the town of Sorrento. So it didn't feel like Times Square where this is all for the tourists. It just truly, truly felt like a little Italian town. I will turn it over to Adrienne to talk about how she got into Sorrento.
I was on a 14-day Mediterranean cruise, and so we pulled up to shore, took a bus, and our first stop was Sorrento. And same thing, they dropped us off in the main town square where all the buses drop you off. And I really enjoyed it. And I would agree with you. It didn't seem super touristy. It seemed like just a regular town people live in that some tourists happen to be at in the main square cafes. So Sorrento is known for their citrus. I think anything in that strip of land, the Amalfi Coast, I think is on the other side of the strip of land. Their citrus is great. And they're known for their limoncello. And also what Sorrento is known for is their linen clothes because it's very warm there. So I went up and down the main drag where all the shops are and I was looking for a linen shirt or dress or something to bring back. It's something I always wanted from Sorrento. And they had plus size, but not American plus size. I think their plus size was like a size 12. So that was disappointing. However, there are multiple shops and factories that make limoncello and you can do all the tasting you want. And they do more than just limoncello. It's melancello, limoncello, you name it, cello. So you can taste them all and they have limoncello cookies. I think I left Sorrento with $200 worth of limoncello and limoncello cookies. So then we jump back on the bus after a couple hours and then we head over to Pompeii. Now, Pompeii is the ruins of probably the biggest town in that region, and it's at the base of Mount Vesuvius. And Mount Vesuvius is a volcano near the Bay of Naples in Italy. It's erupted more than 50 times. Its most famous eruption took place in the year 79 AD, where it buried the city of Pompeii under a thick carpet of volcanic ash, preserving the city until it was rediscovered in 1748. To me, even though the town was from 79 AD, Pompeii felt like it was a preserved modern city in terms of the urban layout. So I think we got there in the afternoon about 2 o'clock, blazing hot. I think it was like 93 degrees, 1,000,000,000% humidity, and I wasn't prepared. I didn't bring a hat. I think I had a bottle of water, which I had quickly consumed. So when you get dropped off, at least on a tour bus, you get dropped off at this bazaar, which is at the base of Pompeii, and it's right before the main archaeological entrance. And you can buy snacks and souvenirs and parasols or hats, but it's definitely at a premium. So I bought a really cheap quality parasol for 10, 15 euro, and one small bottle of water was $3. So just be super prepared when you go because it is blazing hot. Now, did you go in the afternoon or did you go in the morning?
We went fairly late morning, I would say, because we did Herculaneum first. So by the time we got to Pompeii, it was probably 11 o'clock. So I went at a not lovely time.
So our tour guide gives us time to purchase what we need to purchase. We go through the main entrance and just think it is going up a really, really big hill. It's slow. There's going to be a lot of stops along the way, but it's all uphill. And it's, again, humid. You need to keep hydrated. There was no breeze until you get to the top. When you're walking through the town, you're going to see divots in the street. And that's where the chariot wheels would go. So they had built this infrastructure for these chariot wheels.
Yeah. So the chariot grooves could be anywhere from like 6 to 8 inches. But then because the town actually used the streets as waterways for rain and flood as well as waste, they have the sidewalk. I think there's definitely one that was at least 2 feet from where you were stepping from the ground up onto this quote unquote sidewalk.
I almost ate it a few times and luckily my husband was there to catch me because there's no handrails or anything. Lauren, you had mentioned that hiking sticks would have been very helpful here because there was a lot of uneven surfaces and things you had to kind of pull yourself up to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And a great way to think about whether or not you're ready for the trip to Pompeii is I do have on my blog a PSG plus size Globetrotter rating system where I kind of give you an idea, like if you're a one or a two or a three, all the way up to 10, read out the little things. If you can do this, you can do that. I would rate Naples and Pompeii specifically at like a 5-6. So you'll be pushing yourself at Pompeii for sure. As Adrian mentioned, it was hot, but I went in late April, which was crazy hot. Adrian went in June. So I don't even want to think about what it felt like in June as opposed to late April.
I regretted my life choices. I'm like, why am I here? It was really, really bad. And I didn't experience any shade until we got to the brothel.
Oh, yeah.
So on the way to the brothel, you'll see a lot of different engravings in the street of penises. And it points you to the brothel, which is really cool. So if you are a visitor and you are saying, hey, I need a brothel tonight, so you don't need Google Maps. You just follow the penises.
Exactly. I love it. Yeah, I experienced the same thing. The first shade for us was also inside that brothel. So I was not coming off a cruise ship. I was at an Airbnb. So I was able to be totally and completely prepared. So what I had brought with myself on the guided tour was, you've probably heard me talk about hydro flasks before. Those are the basically aluminum cans that can keep water or other liquids cold for up to 12 hours or hot, but you know, we're trying to keep things cold. So I was able to take a 40-ounce hydro flask with very cold water. I travel with a parasol everywhere I go because me and heat, we're not friends. We're not good friends, which is ironic that I live in an island in the middle of the Pacific, but hey. And then also like just a hand fan, you know, one of those cheap $1 ones you pick up, you can open up and fan yourself. So those are the three things that I was able to bring along to make my trip a little bit more comfortable. But as Adrian mentioned, the sidewalks are really, really deep. So the one thing that I hadn't even considered until I got to this trip was one of those retractable hiking sticks, simply because you got to walk up that 2-foot thing, but you've also got to walk across. You actually have to, at some point, like walk from sidewalk to sidewalk. And sometimes it's like 3 feet, and a lot of people are doing a little hop, and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm not so great on the hopping. So I found myself wishing that I had somebody to basically give me a hand. You know, I did have my mom with me. We were able to help each other, but like, what if this was one of Lauren's solo trips? What could I have done? I'm not going to find some rando stranger and just be like, help me. So I thought, hiking stick, retractable, amazing. As soon as I got home, I bought a pair. And when my mom went to New Zealand, she went by herself. She said she almost ate it like 3 times in Hobbiton because, you know, it's muddy and rainy out there. And she's like, without the hiking stick, I would have probably had mud all over and died. No, she wouldn't have died. But anyways. And then one thing that I think when Adrian and I were discussing this location, a lot of people like to be independent, but there is so much history at this spot as well as the other spot nearby, Herculaneum, but you can go there and just see these things and be like, cool. Or you can go and actually learn a lot about it. We both had travel guides who explained a lot of things to us. There's tour guides that'll take you on a private tour. You can do group tours, but you're going to really appreciate the trip a lot more into Pompeii. It's going to make the heat of the day well worth it by just learning about this area that you traveled so far to get to. But as Adrian mentioned, the one place that they had breeze was at the very, very top of the hill. So you're kind of just working your way up the hill throughout the whole trip. And we got a lovely coastal breeze finally up there. And that's where you're going to find the artifacts that you're most familiar with, which are, of course, the busts of the people that they found. Basically, when the ash covered them, their body decomposed, and what they could do is just like fill in with cement in the like empty area where their bodies and their clothes and everything were, and fill in like a complete bust of humans, dogs, chariot wheels. So that's where you're going to see those, is at the very, very end. And as I mentioned, I went to Herculaneum, the other stop. And it's a much smaller town. It was kind of even more known as the sexy brothel town, the dirtier side of the area. And it was even preserved better than Pompeii was, because prior to them getting the pumice, they got a mudslide. So you can actually find wood that they use, like wooden beams and stuff like that, that have survived since 79 AD, which is like amazing. Smaller than Pompeii. Instead of walking up the hill to see everything, you walk down, which means what goes down must come up. So no matter what, these are hilly, harder locations to visit, but without a doubt, if you want to do it, you can do it. before we move on to our next segment, which is the food venture part, I just wanted to mention I did have time to visit the Archaeological Museum in Naples, and that is where you're going to find basically everything that they've unearthed. So when you get to Pompeii, you're going to see like structure, you're going to see like infrastructure, that sort of thing. You're just not going to see the actual artifacts that they found. You'll find that in the Naples Archaeological Museum. Easy to find, center of town, not expensive. And speaking of the penises and the sexy time places, you can actually ask specifically to be let into the area where you can see the sexy time artifacts. So drawings with positions, all that fun stuff you can see there. Now, Adrian, our favorite part, or your favorite part especially.
Well, before I go into Food Ventures, I'm so sad that my tour didn't take us to the Archaeological Museum because I had expected to see more of those kinds of things on the Pompeii exploration. But I was on an excursion, so they had so many hours in Sorrento, so many hours in Pompeii. But I think that I would have loved to see the artifacts. I think it would have heightened the experience so much more. Thank you for sharing. I had no idea it was even there. And who doesn't want to see sexy time depictions? I think all of us do.
It just goes to show that nothing much has changed.
There you go. So let's talk about my favorite foods here. Now, I was only in this area for a day, so I didn't get to try a whole lot of things, but I will talk to you about the things I did try. So again, all the cellos, and I ended up bringing home two different types of melon cello and these cookies that were stuffed with limoncello cream. Lauren, did you get to try those unique lemon hard candies with fizzy lemon in the middle of it?
Oh yeah, that's what I brought home to my dog sitters.
Those were delicious.
Yeah.
And the pizza. So Naples is the birthplace of pizza, and the pizza shop that started it all in Naples, you got to try that, right?
I'm not sure if they started it all, but I know they're probably the most famous Neapolitan pizzeria in Naples because of the movie with Julia Roberts, Eat, Pray, Love. That's the restaurant where she goes in and she's like, I'm in love with my pizza. I am currently in love with my pizza. That sort of story. I did get to go to Starita in Naples, and it was that good. They actually made a satellite Starita in New York City. They're buying everything from Naples. They have a certified Neapolitan oven, but I don't know. There was something about taking the unbearably crazy, scary taxi ride. Because they drive like maniacs in Naples. I took video. I was so scared. I was like, this is what happened when I died. But just being there, the menus got a little bit of English. The people have a little bit of English, but it's really an Italian experience. So even though there's one in New York City, if you go to Naples, Starita is definitely worth it. I think I had the best gelato of my life as well while I was there. Normally, I don't pipe up too much during the food venture, but this is the time where I definitely had the amazing experience with the pizza. But I also visited a little town called Ravello while I was there, which is a little bit south of actual Amalfi. And the town itself is gorgeous and beautiful. But there is a gelateria there that it is now becoming like super, super famous. It's called Bafone Gelateria, B-A-F-F-O-N-E. And I don't even love cherries like I love other fruits. But my mom got the cherry gelato and I was like fighting her for it. And now I'm like a huge cherry fan because of this gelateria. Like I bought her a piece of cherry pie for dessert today so I could have a bite. Traveling changes you. And I was never a huge cherry fan. And I had this amazing cherry gelato. And now, even to this day, I am now finally a fan of cherries. But anyways, that's just my food venture talk.
I didn't have any gelato while I was there. But what I did have, and this is going to be at a lot of the restaurants in the area, is Delicia al Limone. And that is sponge cake or like a fluffy cake. I can't tell if it's sponge. And it's soaked in a lemony cream custard. And then it's topped with whipped cream. It's kind of a tres leches cake, but all lemon. And their lemons in this region are so distinct in flavor. I was in heaven. The two meals I did have when I was there, it ended with a shot of limoncello. And that was your experience as well, right?
Yes. Every meal that I ate out in the whole region, at the very end. It's kind of like when they bring you that star peppermint at the end of a meal. In Italy, it's here's your shot of limoncello.
I didn't get to have the famous Julia Roberts pizza, but I had pizza in Sorrento, and I think it was from Pizzeria Di Franco, and it's in the main square, and you can't miss it because there's a bunch of people sitting outside or waiting to get in, and that pizza was incredible. Even if you can't make it to the Julia Roberts pizza place and you're in Sorrento, try that pizza. It was fantastical.
You definitely don't have to go to the pop culture famous place because all over the area, they know how to make pizza. And actually, fun fact, the way they really, really eat them, like the actual Neapolitan people, is they don't sit at a restaurant very often to have their pizza. They get the whole pizza and they like fold it into quarters, kind of like a crepe. And they just sort of eat the pizza that way. It's not cut up. It's just kind of like eating it like a basically a calzone in a weird way. But just the food in that area is to die for, which of course is why they're so famous. But this adventure regarding shoes, I hope that you learned a lot, and I hope that you don't double up on some of the mistakes that Adrian and I have made in the past, and that you have learned something. Feel free to reach out to us anytime with questions about these areas. Now, don't forget, you can listen to the Plus Size Traveler podcast at plussizetravelerpodcast.com, Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at the Plus Size Traveler Podcast. Don't forget, we have a brand new website, plussizetravelerpodcast.com, and that's where you can see links to bios for both Adrian and myself, links to our blogs, and links to our Instagram and Facebook accounts. Don't forget, thank you for listening. We're truly grateful and hope that you had a great time like we did.
And every episode, we switch between international and domestic locations. Our fourth episode, we talk all about Montreal and Vermont, as well as our very first special guest, and that was with Plus Size Backpacking and travel blogger, Edith Bernier. So get out there and explore, you fellow Plus Size travelers.
Mahalo.
Oh, no. We got to do it in Italian.
Oh, that's right. Grazie, everybody.
Grazie.